is it? Like, I just want to crack the code. Like, why is it when I look at these rooms on Pinterest, they feel kind of finished and done? Mm. They feel peaceful, like some of the rooms that I had pinned. But then when I looked up in my own house, it felt chaotic.
Welcome to the Minimal Mom Podcast. Dawn reaches a million women each month with practical tips to simplify your home.
Today, Dawn is joined by McQuillan Smith, also known as The Nester. McQuillan is recognized for her expertise in the field of home decor and design. She is an author, speaker, and blogger who gained popularity for her insights into creating beautiful, comfortable homes without the pressure of perfection. McQuillan's philosophy revolves around embracing imperfections, simplicity, and a sense of personal style in home decor. She encourages individuals to make the most of their living spaces with practical and achievable design ideas.
Well, Michael, it's so great to get to visit with you today. You are the author of Cozy Minimalist Home. I love this book. I recommend this book. So we are going to talk about how to create a cozy minimalist home. We're also going to talk about some interior design tactics that can actually be learned. Like there are, for those women that are like, I'm not good at it. How do I do it? Like, I love that you're like, no, we got you. Like, you know, there's a few things you got to learn here. So we're going to talk about some rules for your home when you want to, you've got it decluttered and now you just want to make it like real cute, right? But first, let's talk about this idea of hushing your house. Because when I heard this, I'm like, you are a genius, because I've talked about the silent to-do list before and people are like, this is where everything in your house sends you a message. And I've literally had women say, my house is screaming at me. It's not just talking to me. It's screaming at me. And so can you explain to us what this idea of house hushing is?
Oh, absolutely. It's, you know, I'm a decorator. So I definitely love a space that feels simple and serene, but I'm a cozy minimalist, which is really like the best of both worlds. I want the most amount of style with the least amount of stuff. And so I have to come up with little, I hate to call it ways to trick myself, but it's ways to trick myself really. And one way I've done that, instead of like facing forward with all of this decision fatigue of, I need to declutter my family room, I am making all of these decisions, what I do is, you know, we both know that whether it's every year, every 6 months, like we are adding things to our home. Let's take our family room, for example. I know, you know, in the spring, I'm adding a little potted plant, and then we are adding catalogs, and then we're adding, you know, stuff and stuff. And especially at the end of the year, when we're all especially thinking about clearing out our Christmas stuff, and then we're in our cluttered family room, you know, a lot of the times what it feels like is that if everything in your room has a visual voice, it can feel like this loud roar, even if you love everything in your room.
Right.
It just can begin to fill up. And what I found is, instead of just like me taking everything and deciding if I love it or not, a way to kind of cheat the system for me was to hush the house, which means I'm just going to take all of my smalls out, all of my little decor, all of the gee-gaw, all of the tchotchkes, the things, you know, the pillows on my sofa, the throws on the sofa, the clock on the mantle, all the family photos, the books, the stuff on the surfaces, just get that out. I find another room in the house where I can just temporarily stash that stuff. Like 24 hours is the key. You don't just want to do it for an hour. You want to have like overnight where everyone in the family can experience the room hushed. And so the goal is to get all that small stuff out of your room into another place where you've not seen it and experience it. Watch a movie in the room, you know, let the dog roll around on the floor and the kids experience it. At first, it's always a little bit weird. Like it takes an hour or so because you think, this is so awkward. What in the room, this world, it feels like echoey. But what happens is over an hour or two, or even the next morning, you start to see all the benefits that come from this quieted space. And what happens with me, it works every time. And even though I know the trick is, I am suddenly really, really picky about what I let myself bring back in. And it's this way of backwards decluttering where instead of the pressure being on making individual decisions, I get to reap the rewards and the benefits of having a simple room. And now I'm really protective of it. I'm like,
yeah,
what's this up? This feels so amazing. So then I'm like, I only bring in like 10% of the things back. Yes, I want that art. I love this family photo. I want this plant. But because I trust that the end result already is going to be beautiful and peaceful, it makes me so much pickier about this pile of stuff. And it has allowed me to really declutter while still honoring, you know, having a beautiful home and having simplicity.
Yes. And I think that is so brilliant because sometimes you have to feel what it's going to feel like decluttered and simplified, like you said, to really have a value for it. And I love what you said, that you're like protective of it then when you bring stuff back in, because I get that. We painted when we, after we moved in. And so I hadn't put much up yet, but then we kind of took everything back down and back out. And you're right. Initially, like, oh, it's so stark and bare, but then you kind of like, ooh, but it feels kind of nice in here too. I can breathe. I can think. I can contemplate. You know, I don't know what, but you're just like, there's just more possibilities in this room when there's like not so much stuff in it. But okay, but so tell me this though, because a lot of times the stuff that's in there, it was gifts. It was handed down. It's special. It's sentimental. It's family. I can't not put back in the family photos. So how do you differentiate between something that like feels like it should be there because it's special and me saying, maybe that's not how I want to decorate anymore. Maybe I don't want to have all that stuff out anymore.
Yes. Well, I know we both have heard the quote and probably quoted it, when everything is important, nothing is. And I think that especially applies to things like, for example, family photos. If I have 53 family photos out, no one gets to see any of them. But if I have one in a really special frame, that one gets all of the attention. Now, do I throw away and burn all the other ones? No. I just pick a pretty box or a pretty, you know, photo album or whatever, and I put them in there. But I have found that if I give everything equal importance in my home, then nothing gets attention and nothing feels special. And so that's just a way I'm able to honor that. So yeah, every year or so I do kind of switch out which photos are in the frame. A lot of times I'll just stack it on top. And so yeah, then I kind of see the ones behind, you know, and get to enjoy the new ones.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I've been feeling just so much that we live in such a noisy, busy, chaotic world that more than ever, we really need a peaceful place to come home to. And sometimes that chaos has made its way into our house and we don't even realize that our brain is like begging for a break from all of the input and clutter. And it like just actually wants some blank spaces in our house even to be able to rest and fully let our guard down. And so I love this because I do think you have to sometimes experience it before you can fully appreciate it. I think it would work fantastic in kids' bedrooms too, because we really let the inventory creep up in those spaces and our kids don't know. If we're like, let's declutter your bedroom, well, they don't know like what that's going to feel like or look like.
Yes. Call it hushing, put it in the other room and let them say, I don't want to mess with this. This looks and feels great.
And we've all had that experience, right? Where when we do clean their room or the family room and they like come in and they're like dancing and they're like, they love it, right? I think the kids are minimalists at heart. So I fully believe that. That is so cool. I love that. And so let's talk a little bit about cozy minimalism. Your book is so fun and so beautiful. You have a great style too, because even though you are fairly minimal, like you said, like how can you achieve it with as little as possible? So first tell us, how did you kind of get into minimalism? And then we'll get some of your tips for making it feel cozy.
Well, I have long been a minimalist lurker, like for 15 years, reading the blogs, watching the different shows. And what I realized was I would be sitting with my laptop on my lap, you know, on back then, this was before people like you, Don. This is when it was like bachelors counting their items. And so I would look at their homes, I would look at their rooms and be like, oh, that feels so peaceful. But then I'd look around my own house and I'm like leaning back on a cozy pillow with a throw, hat and my slippers. And, you know, it felt good. And I couldn't, there was no one representing a beautiful home with just enough stuff, not too much, that still didn't feel like it was going to echo, that still felt welcoming. So I felt like I had to make a choice. Like you had to pick a side. You're either a minimalist or you're like crazy maximalist. And it wasn't until we moved into our fixer upper, and something about living in a fixer upper, I didn't want to bring a bunch of stuff in. I kept stuff in our barn, and I was trying to be really mindful about what we had in the house. And so I was looking at Pinterest, as we do, looking at beautiful rooms. And then I would look up at my own room. And I remember thinking, why is it, like, I just want to crack the code. Like, why is it when I look at these rooms on Pinterest, they feel kind of finished and done. Mm. They feel peaceful, like some of the rooms that I had pinned. But then when I looked up in my own house, it felt chaotic. And for some reason, I think probably because I was reading some of those minimalist blogs, I counted the items in those Pinterest photos that I liked. And I remember one had like 30 some items. And then I counted the items in my room. And I had two or three times as many items.
Yeah.
All of my items were really small. I was trying to, and my style was really important to me. Like, I wanted a peaceful home, but I still wanted to feel cozy and comfortable. But when you are decorating, and I was trying to be mindful of my budget and not, I don't know, who wants to move a big vase? But what was happening was I was putting the pressure on all of my tiny tchotchkes to carry my style. But then when I looked at rooms that I loved, they had a big, large rug. They had one lamp on the surface, but the lamp was beautiful.
Yeah.
And functional. Then they had drapes on the wall. And I didn't have any of that. I had like three little throw rugs and all different. Actually can make your room feel more cluttered. My lamps did not have any presence visually. And so then my surfaces felt empty. So then I was, my wall art was too small. So then I would do like an accidental gallery wall.
Yes, right. Yeah.
So that's what I was doing. And it changed everything when I realized, oh, if I can just use a few more items of scale, if I can nail that scale, even though it sounds crazy, like if you are in a shop and you see a vase that's 4 inches or you see one that's 12 inches, as a cozy minimalist, I want to get the most amount of style with the least amount of stuff. I'm going to choose the larger one and then I need less.
Yeah, that is so good. And I hear so many women as they have been decluttering, they're like, ooh, my decor feels cluttery now. You know, it kind of feels too much. And I think you're exactly right, because we've kind of gone through this style too, especially with like Hobby Lobby, and everything's like layered and it's little and it's all a bunch of stuff put together and it's gallery walls and it's, but not just a gallery wall of photo frames. It's like all the other like sayings and things in it. And so that's where I've thought a lot about that too. I'm like, I think we have to go backwards a little bit. And not, if we're going to do a gallery wall, it needs to be very uniform and like same frame and, you know, whatever, but like maybe one piece of artwork or one larger family photo would feel better than all of the little ones. That's really interesting. I love that you counted all of the things too. That's so good.
And I'm not saying anyone needs to count their stuff ever, but it was extremely helpful.
Yeah. And then how do you though do it on a budget? Because that's the other thing, is I know many women are like, okay, I don't feel good at like the style side of it, and I don't want to spend a bunch of money and then get it and have it not come together. So how do we start to, okay, we reduce the number of items, but how do we make sure it feels cohesive and not break the bank while we're doing this?
Yes. Well, I think, not that it's easy. I mean, everything has a cost, and money is one way to pay. We can pay with our time. We can pay with our creativity. We can pay with our skills. We can barter. So yes, money is a way to pay, but there are all kinds of ways to pay. And I think, especially for someone who is a cozy minimalist, who wants every individual item in their room to contribute to the overall style, in some ways, I think it's easier for us because we might be looking at things with a different eye. We might want the artwork that has more visual presence that everyone else is afraid of, but we're like, no, I just want one big art piece of art, and it's going to be at the thrift store for $20, or I'm going to make my own art and just cover a canvas that someone is selling next door at the yard sale for $5. So as you begin to rethink how you can use functional beauty in your home and even incorporate scale, things will come to mind that maybe you never thought to use before. I mean, I'm looking at a secondhand lamp in my room right now. I've had it for years and years. It was $20. Like, you can't go to Target and get a lamp for $20, but I was willing. Well, I've painted over it twice now. And in a few years, I'll probably paint over again.
Yeah.
But I love that he's 24 inches tall, just the base. So he's got so much presence. I'll never get rid of it. But yes, it did take a couple trips to a couple different stores, but it was time well spent.
Yeah, that's so good. And I think we have to kind of be okay with experimenting, trying, you know, maybe we have to move the lamp around, we have to rearrange the furniture, that if something doesn't feel right away, that we're willing to take some time, because it is hard, because we think like, well, I should just be able to buy the pieces, put it in there, and then have it.
That, it never happens. I think that's what we see. HGTV, bless its heart, has ruined us. Because we think a decorator is someone who picks out all the stuff for a room, puts it in there, and it looks great. The skill of decorating, which anyone can learn, is actually knowing what to do when stuff doesn't look great together. I think one of the funnest things is to do exactly what you said, Dawn, and get to move the lamp around to three different surfaces and decide where I like it best. The goal is for everyone to love their own home, so you can forget about it, so you can use it, and so you get to decide where you like the lamp. I mean, what a privilege to get to play in our home's home. Our home should be the safest place on earth to try something out and to take a risk. Even in one of my house rules is risk, take one and pass it on. Like, I think kids to see us like, I'm going to paint this lamp. You can't ruin something you already hate. Like, go to the easy lamp, go to your basement, pull that lamp out you were getting ready to give away and say, well, before I give it away, I'm just going to practice. Like, I'm going to spray paint it and we'll see. And if I still hate it, I can still just take it to the thrift store. So baby step your way. But I think it's good for our kids and even ourselves to see, like, of course I'm going to take a risk in the privacy of my own home. What could go wrong? Nothing. I'll just give it away if I don't like it.
Yeah. I love that so much. And isn't it amazing how sometimes we get kind of locked in with like, well, no, of course the sofa goes on that wall, or of course the lamp goes on this end table next to the, and if we would be willing to just say like, I'm just going to throw the rules out the window and we're just going to move it around and try different things. But what do you do if maybe like, what if it's like your spouse or partner or someone else in your house who is like, no, that's where it goes, or this is the color lamps are supposed to be, or like, do you have any tips for navigating that with others in your household?
I have lots of tips. Well, I think depending on the room, like I think there are some rooms where my husband has a bigger say because it's more important to him. He's in there more and I want to honor that. And then there are other rooms where I'm just really not very confident. And so I'll ask him 1,000 questions and he'll answer it because I asked. But in the scale of 1 to 10, does he really care? No. And I think a lot of times we get confused because we're like, my husband doesn't like those blue throw pillows on our bed. Well, it's because you were a nervous wreck about it and you said, which one do you like? And he said, pick the purple ones. And now you're saying he hates the other ones. But a lot of times I think it's a confidence issue in our part and they're just trying to help. But I think too, having a conversation about, okay, you know, we need new chairs for the family room. How important is the look and the function of the chairs to you? How important is it to me? And then I think a lot of times it's just a communication issue that we don't have a shared language. And one way to give us a shared language is Pinterest. Have a Pinterest board. Look, if you want to say in the living room, I want you to have a say. So a way for us to communicate is you pin like 20 images, have your husband pin 20 images of living room he really likes, then you do the same, get some coffee, sit together at the table and look at your images together. So many times you're like, oh, actually, I really like that room that you, but you didn't have the words to describe. And so it gives you the words.
That's so good. And because actually, you probably knew this, Pinterest was actually created for men first.
I did not know this.
Yeah, it was for them to share like pictures of cars and different things. And then women took it over. And, and then they realized it did much better with women. Well, side note, then I have a question for you because it just made me think of, so in our kitchen right now, so we have a old farmhouse too, right? We have white upper cabinets, blue lowers. And we did the kind of black and white farmhouse thing with black pulls, black light fixtures, black faucet. But then I had to add in a little personality, right, with our blue cabinets or whatever, lower cabinets. I am wanting to update everything to brushed gold, brushed bronze-ish colors right now, get rid of the black, just bring that in to, as a way, a pretty inexpensive way to update it. My family, even our oldest daughter, Adeline, who's usually on my side, is pushing back. I switched out some of the handles already to a brushed gold. And they're like, this is not where design is going right now. This is, and I'm like, no. It is all going to the warm tones again. Like silver, brushed nickel is out, black is out. Like, are we going warm tones with the metals again?
I don't ever believe that a cool or warm is in or out. But I believe that we should have what we like. So yes, is
you're staying real safe there with your answer
right now. Yes, unlacquered brass is in. I'm a chrome girl. I love chrome. Like who? I'm crazy. No one even uses chrome, and I love it. So I think, well, who's in the kitchen the most? Like, not everyone gets an equal vote here. If you're in the kitchen all the time, and I think you did the perfect thing, which is like, I'm just going to go ahead and switch some out. So everyone's allowed to have an opinion, but in some rooms, some opinions matter more than others.
Yeah. I love actually, because I did ask Tom ahead of time. There was like a marriage tool we had learned or communication tool one time that said like, well, ask the person on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is it to you? And for me, I'm like, well, I make videos in there. I invite millions of women into my kitchen every day. Like it's like a 9 to me, actually, you know? And Tom's like, it's like a solid 2 to me. So even though he doesn't care for them, he was like, go to town. Like, it's fine, you know? So, and then Adeline, you know, she gets no say, but I'm just always curious what she thinks about it. But so, okay. Thank you. That's
really helpful. Cool.
And isn't it fascinating? Like you can actually get really inexpensive hardware on Amazon now. Now you have to be careful the quality. Sometimes like the holes don't line up, but it was fun that I can actually do this on a pretty low budget with swapping things out now, which feels kind of good.
And change the whole feel of your kitchen. We're mm-hmm. all going to look at it and be like, something looks different and I can't figure out what it is.
Yep. Yeah. So I'm actually really excited about it. And one thing else I've learned, because our house is like a solid 1500 square feet, like we don't have big spaces. And so as we've been updating and remodeling, I've really tried to add in more like architectural details and visual interest that way that still reflects some like personality and like our style and fits the house so that it doesn't take so many like pieces of decor either.
I think that is so smart and such a great way to think about it, because it is true. The smaller your house is, the more you're noticing everything that's around. I mean, you notice when you're in a room, no matter what, but I think that makes a lot of sense for you. I think that's a great idea.
Well, let's talk about your new book coming out, House Rules, because I'm really excited about this. Tell us about the book and then I'm going to pick your brain more about it.
Well, it's a book of rules from a girl who doesn't like rules, but I am a teacher. I love figuring out why it is that in my last house, when I put this piece of art over my mantle, I loved it. And then in my next house, I put the same art over my mantle. It looked ridiculous. Why is that? And there are logical reasons why some things look great together and other things don't. I think we kind of falsely believe that some people were born with a decorating gene and other of us aren't. I don't believe that at all. Decorating is a skill that you can learn. And the people that seem to be naturally good at it just started a lot earlier. I know I started playing with Barbies and decorating Barbie houses. So I kind of learned about scale and contrast and things like that. Even then, I was decorating my room in high school when my friends were, you know, on dates. I was the nerd staying home on the weekends. So I got to learn without anyone paying attention.
Yes.
And I think when you do that, you don't even realize that you're internalizing some maybe universal decorating truths, or if you're a cook, universal cooking truths or whatever it is. But I was able to do that a little bit. But I really want to be able to teach those just like simple truths that apply to every home, no matter your style, no matter your budget, no matter your home style. And that's what this book is full of. So it's things like contrast is queen if you want to be seen. So as you're thinking about what I want to help people is when they're at Target, I don't want people to be like, I need to buy something to make my house look pretty. That is the worst. Don't ever do that. I want you to say, I need to go to Target and look for a vase that's about 12 inches high, that has a wide mouth, that's dark and opaque. Like that is how. And I want to be able to teach you to be able to go to the stores with confidence, because you know, contrast is queen if you want to be seen, and your fireplace is white and your mantle is white and you have white art up there and you want to add a vase with some greenery in it. And you know, contrast is queen if you want to be seen. So you don't want to add a white vase. You want to add something with contrast.
Yeah. Oh, that is so good. I love that so much. I don't want to brag, but when I was in high school, one of my 4-H projects was my last year of high school going into college. One of my 4-H projects was to design the dorm room that I was moving into. So I did like a whole interior design. I had fabric swatches, and I did end up going to the state fair with it. But I would watch Trading Spaces in college, and I would go home on the weekends to my parents' like farmhouse, and I would paint the all the molding white, and I was doing color on the walls. And but there was a lot of things that did not work out well at all. But I learned so much through that process.
Exactly. And that's when it's fun. And I think now when you grow up and you're a mom and your kids are watching and your husband's watching and you have a budget, you don't feel as free to do that. And so I think just being able to have baby steps of, you know, maybe finding the thing that we were going to give away and practicing painting on that, or buying something secondhand, really inexpensive, and knowing if we mess it up, no one has to know. There's such easy ways for us to get started.
Yeah, I really appreciate that a lot. And something else that's been really interesting to me, like I did graphic design stuff in college, and I learned that, and I'm like, oh, like those design, that's where I first learned about like design rules, and that as you learn the rules, like you said, contrast, like that's totally like a design, just like a across the board design principle. And something else, I've shared this on some of my videos, that has been really helpful was learning how to use accent colors and the percentage. So you actually, oh goodness, I'm forgetting the percentages now. It's like, is it 10% accent, 30% a secondary color, and like 60% like a base color? But you're like, whatever.
I know what you're talking about. I don't know the numbers, but I've heard that too. And it's excellent. It's so helpful.
It's so good, because I was going too far with the accent color, and it was throwing everything off. And it's that thing where you stand back and you look at your space then, and you're like, why doesn't it doesn't feel right, right? Like it doesn't, like I don't like, and it's like, okay, so maybe like in our kitchen, we painted our lower cabinets blue, and then I had red bar stools, which I thought were so cool. And that was going to be my accent color. It looked a little patriotic, which I wasn't quite intending for. But then I was like, this is so wrong. And I ended up then getting light blue ones that were a very similar color to the base cabinets. And people were like, no, you need an accent color. And I'm like, no, because the stools were, it was too much. It was too big of a space. So yes, I want to have, I ended up with a yellow accent color, but in just some small pieces on our open shelves, the stools themselves to be the accent color, it was too high of a percentage. Like it was too big of accents. Like I needed a smaller amount. And so it was just so, it was so fun to me though, to like solve that puzzle and to like figure out. And I like borrowed like a yellow vase from my mom. And then I got something from the thrift store, you know, like, and my mom's like, you can keep it for a while. And then after a while, I decided I didn't want yellow to be my accent color, but it wasn't a lot to change out, but it totally changed the feel of the room then. And it was just like, it was just so fun.
And it gives you confidence, because oh, you're yeah. like, there's a reason. Like, it's not just some woo-woo feeling and tomorrow I'm going to feel different. There's yeah. a reason why these things are in a relationship together. And now they look right to me, or like how you said, when you look at it, you're like, it just doesn't look right. We all have that innate thing where, you know, we're looking for balance or whatever, you know, even if people talk about mixing woods or mixing metals, and there's a rule of, if you do it three times, then it makes you look like you're doing it with confidence. And if you do it a million times, it makes you look crazy. If you do it once, it looks like an accident. And so just little things like that, that can give us confidence in what we're doing.
Yeah. That's so cool. Well, give us another rule, because this is so fun.
Oh my goodness.
Well, and show us your book too, because it's so cool.
Here's the book. And I'll tell you, the first rule is to learn the rules and then break them beautifully. So in one of his books, Andrew Peterson talks about how an artist has to learn the right to break the rules. And I love that, because it acknowledges that there are universal truths with whatever endeavor we're doing. But it also tells us that the rules are there to be bent. However, for us to bend them in the right way, like when it comes to decorating, I want people to bend the rules. I want you to decorate with a tiny piece of art in an inconspicuous, fun way, because you know the room will be better, not because you don't know better. And so there's such a difference in how we approach our home in that way. So like another rule that I have, it talks about plant math. And I believe every home can really benefit by having some plants. And after teaching about plants for, you know, 20 years on the internet, the pushback I always get is, but my plants always die, which of course, like plants are a living thing. All of my plants are marching towards death. They are all going to die one day. The goal is not to have a plant to live forever. So when you kind of, you know how we do the cost of use, like with our clothing or something, when you think about that with your plants, you think, well, if you buy a $12 plant, say it lasts 6 months, that's $2 a month. Like you cannot even buy baby's breath from the grocery store. And that's if it dies after 6 months. You know, I think a lot about raising a plant is kind of learning your compatibility. It's like matchmaking. Like, what kind of plant can I, water or underwater, my house, if it's bright, if it's light, and where I need it, and the plant and its needs, the three of us need to get together and figure out what works. And it can be rewarding. Now, if you're new, having twins and coming home and taking care of your aging parents, it might not be the time to get to know a plant. It can be a fun, rewarding thing, but the goal is not to keep your plant alive forever. The goal is just to enjoy the plant while it is alive.
Yeah. Okay. So how many do we have?
How many
plants, or what's the plant math? What was your rule?
The plant math is when you do the cost per.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. Yes.
So
okay.
Really, like a $12 plant. Let's do the math. So $2 a month, then that would be 50 cents a week. So that's like, someone do that math. I can't do that.
That's awesome.
Plant math. Yeah. I don't want anyone to have to do long algebra, but the math suddenly makes us realize that, oh, I don't need to buy, like, if I buy a dozen roses from the store, tulips, they last a week, and it's much better for your value if you buy a plant.
Well, and I think often we're like, yeah, but if I go to IKEA and I buy a fake plant, that's going to last forever. But how do you think real plants feel differently in our house than all these fake ones we've been buying?
Well, I do think it's a little bit of a personal opinion. I don't like fake plants. I do have a few. I believe that fake plants should fake us out. Your fake plants should look good enough and should be in places where plants could actually live. If you have a fake plant in your basement with no windows, like we all know. So you should at least try to fool us with your
fake. Or like that ivy on top of the cabinets, the kitchen cabinets, not really fooling anyone.
We all know. Yeah. So I do think there is something, there's been studies done. I don't know the science, but a real living plant does add something to our homes. And I think we all can kind of feel that. I've over time kind of enjoyed watching something grow, learning about it. And then also, you know, as a decorator, it's an opportunity to add beauty, to add something that is living, to add freshness. And every plant needs a container. And so you get an opportunity to add a cool container in your personal style, whether it's an urn or a wooden crate or a cool grass bag. So, you know, you have these fun opportunities to bring texture and color and pattern in. So you kind of get a 2-for-1.
Yeah, I love that. Because then when it does live and it, like, longer than you normally keep plants alive, there is something very rewarding about that. And there is something very relaxing about, like, caring for it and watering it and removing dead leaves and whatnot that I have really come to appreciate. I've switched out almost all of my fake plants now. So it's been enjoyable.
I like that. And, you know, if you look through shelter magazines or Pinterest, every image you pin probably has a plant in it. That's just
how interesting.
Imagine those rooms and just go look at your, you know, Instagram, scroll through. In any room that you love, you're going to see green, and it's a plant. They're just part of a balanced decor.
That's so good. Okay. I want to ask you, I want to pick your brain one last thing. This idea, okay, our house is small. So we started kind of moving more towards white, towards like white cabinets, white wall. I mean, our walls are a very light color because I couldn't believe how much bigger it felt. Like, our house felt so much more spacious. And I know white reflects light and all of that, but we've kind of come through this trend now where, like, everything was white. So I kind of, like, rebelled against that for a little bit because I'm like, I don't want everything white. But do you think if we have small spaces, do we need to embrace more white or is it just a personal decision?
Well, you're not going to like it, but I think it's a personal decision. Yeah. I love white too. 90% of my house is white. I think also content creators, I really love to photograph a white room.
Yeah.
Also, we probably find ourselves looking at inspiration a lot. And so when I'm on Pinterest, when I'm on Instagram, to get to look at my own walls and have margin and to have white space is very valuable to me. And I think we all have different thresholds of what we need in our own house. I have a tiny little room that's painted like a saturated blue wall, ceiling, trim, everything. I really like it, but I don't have to look at it. And then my bedroom also is painted a color. Everything else in my house is white. And then I paint my trim, reverse trim. So you can see that it's like a darker color. So I feel like it gives me a little bit of interest. but I love a white wall. I love empty walls. I think we sometimes we think like, oh, if you love decor, that means everything must be decorated. But, you know, part of good design is editing out. Part of the skill is creating margin. A wall Sabbath is what I call it. And so every surface doesn't need decor. Every wall doesn't need to be decorated. So to me, like having white walls, and I'm open to changing my mind, and you're allowed to change your mind. But right now for me, it feels really good. And I kind of like crave it.
Yeah, I think that was probably interesting to me too, because I'd always thought like, oh, I really like color on the walls, and I like, but then with this house, we're just like, oh, it's just, like, I think because it was small, I felt like I'm like, we got to keep it real light. And then as we did that, I was like, oh, wow, I maybe like this way more than I thought that I was going to. And so again, it's probably more of that thing of having an open mind. And maybe if your space feels a little dark or heavy, maybe incorporating some lighter colors on the walls, or, and it doesn't have to be white, like just even a lighter color. It's always surprising to me how it kind of opens a space up. We had done our last house. We had this big master bedroom, and we found this like super cool, like teal blue color, and it had light woodwork, and it looked awesome. Like it looked so good in that bedroom. And we moved in this house. Our bedroom is literally, it was 10 feet by 10 feet. And we put the same color on their wall. We're like, we love this color. And I was like, it feels like a dungeon. Like, what have we done? You know? And so like you had said too, with the painting, like looks great over one fireplace, but not the other, that it just not the same things always work in the same spaces.
Absolutely. And it doesn't, I think sometimes we can have some guilt over that. Like, whoops, I did it wrong. No, it's all just kind of a learning process, especially when you move. Give yourself time to make decisions and to learn the disposition and the personality of the new house that you're in. Or if you've been in the same house forever, it's kind of the opposite problem, that we become house blind and we're like, well, that room's the living room and that room's it. But, you know, try to see it with fresh eyes, look through the mirror and like get close and imagine it opposite, hush the house for a little bit.
Yes, like, right.
Things out, like, use rooms for different purposes. Ask your friend what they see that you're missing in your house or what they use a room for. Like, you know, wherever you are, just to put yourself in a position where you can see your place with fresh eyes, I think can be so helpful and can give you that inspiration, because, you know, inspiration is great and motivation is great. I think it's great if you're like, we're putting our house on the market, now I'm motivated to decorate it, or hosting a party. But I think my favorite way to be motivated is through inspiration. And so Pinterest, Instagram, I know sometimes those can bring up guilt or like, I don't have enough. But I think if we go to them with the right mindset, that I'm not trying to copy, I'm trying to be inspired and get ideas for my own wonderful home, that we can use those, and those can give us such fuel to make meaningful change, and small changes can make a really big difference.
Yeah, I love that so much. Oh, I kind of want to go decorate some more now. Actually, I want to go hush some rooms first, and then I want to like bring in some new things. So that is so cool. Well, we are definitely going to link to all of your books. We didn't even get to talk about the nesting place too, but I really appreciate that you have ideas that fit any budget. We can use what we have. A lot of it is actually detracting, what's the word? Taking stuff back out. Even it's not even necessarily going and buying new stuff. It's saying, what can I remove from this space to make it feel even better? And I love your house rules book, because I agree with you 100%. If we learn some of these rules, that all of us can be like really rock star designers. And it's really fun and it's really gratifying, especially once you've got your house decluttered and you're so excited to like really make it your own and really feel great too. So, well, thank you so much for being with us today. And I hope we can visit it again another time, because I know this is going to help so many.
I would love that. I love everything you do. Thanks for sharing me with your people. Glad to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us today. If you're looking for more support, be sure to check out The Minimal Mom on YouTube too. And we'll see you next time.